Taking a look next at the world of hybrid vehicles. And I tell you what, Glenn Bauer, senior scientist in mechanical engineering at the University of Wisconsin-Madison College of Engineering, our guest, knows a lot about them. And really pleased to have him with us today. So if you have some questions about these hybrids, hybrid electric vehicles, they combine a lot of benefits, I think. We'll talk with him about those and get his advice and his thoughts on them. And take your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. We'll be glad to get you on. Well, Glenn, good to have you.
Thank you, Larry.
I appreciate it very much. First, I wanted you to talk a little bit. You've got a hybrid electric vehicle team at the UW, and you work with students. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, we've been actually at the College of Engineering having advanced vehicle projects since 1992. Mm-hmm. Before hybrids were even introduced into the U.S., the Department of Energy had these advanced vehicle competitions to try to get students to do hands-on engineering. So we've actually had, we're on our sixth different hybrid platform, actually, and just starting the seventh different competition. So we've got a lot of different experiences on anything from sedans to SUVs, and now we're going back to the crossovers, and the last one was a Chevy Equinox, and mm-hmm. the next one's supposed to be a Saturn View, and I don't know if that'll change as of yesterday or not.
the students do pretty well with that.
We've actually, of the competitions, we've won six of them since I started in 97. So that's about a 50% success rate. And we've also gone to the Michelin Bibendum. We're actually at the Michelin Bibendum. Every major auto manufacturer had their latest, greatest hydrogen or hybrid vehicle on display. And we actually averaged more awards than they did with our hybrid sedan. So,
oh, boy. Well, you mentioned hydrogen. Is hydrogen in the really in the picture?
It's going to be in the long-term picture because we're trying to get at some point in time to a carbon-neutral fuel. And so obviously hydrogen is really the only avenue we can do that with. And so the hybrids are sort of a segue to that, mm-hmm. you know, that carbon-free fuel. And so it's just a matter of how long will it be. And most people, you know, the optimists say 3 or 4 or 5 years, and I'm My money would be on the 10 to 15 year range, and ultimately I think with all the fuels, we can't, when we try to replace petroleum, we're going to have to go to multiple fuels across the United States. So if you're in a very rural area, it's a very good spot to be using ethanol or biodiesel, and you concentrate the hydrogen in the Chicagos and New Yorks mm-hmm. and Detroits, where when you build the infrastructure, you're impacting the greatest number of people.
Yeah, that makes some sense. Well, already we have callers online. Joe in Milton has a question for you, so let's just go right to the phones. Joe, hello.
Hey, great. Thanks for taking my question. Biggest question I've got is we're actually starting to look at possibly a used hybrid and wondering about the longevity of the battery packs in these.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of the major concern of most consumers. What I can tell you from our experience is if you're going to look at the original hybrids from 201 to 203, I would be, if you're looking at a used one in that range, I'd be a little suspect of those batteries. In 204, they actually, Panasonic did a redo of the cells, and they were a lot more resilient, and they basically have a lot better useful life than their first generation cells did. And what's happening then is that the battery manufacturers are, you know, putting a certain warranty on it. I don't know, depending upon which manufacturer, if it's 10 years and 100,000 miles or 5 years and 50,000 miles. But they're supplying the batteries and then a computer program that tells the automotive people how much power they can take in out of the battery or put into the battery. And as long as they stay in those guidelines, then the battery manufacturer is actually the one that is honoring the warranty. So I would look. I mean, I would be, if you're getting 100,000 mile range, I'd be very careful at that time.
All right.
Okay. That's good. That's about where we were looking at.
All right. Thanks for calling, Joe. Appreciate the call. And Edward in Janesville, we're on to you now. Hi, Ed.
Hi. My question is, I'm in the market for a new car probably in the next year, and I'd like to get a hybrid. I like to buy American, so I wanted to know, like, what would be the best rated American-made hybrid car.
Okay. What kind of car are you looking at? A large car, a small car?
Probably mid-sized car.
Okay.
Or more a minivan.
All right.
Okay, so... Well, what I would say is that all the reviews I've heard on the new Ford Fusion Hybrid are very exceptional. I actually have three or four of my graduates that have worked on actually programming that vehicle. And they're basically the people that are driving them back and forth to home, basically they test as they drive home, so they get a little extra test time. And it's pretty common for them to be logging over 40 miles per gallon with a Fusion-sized vehicle. The other ones that are on the market, if you want to do a U.S., would be General Motors has a range of products, and they have a two-mode view. And see, I'm guessing what they're going to do is move that platform into the Chevy Equinox. If you look at the underbody, it's exactly the same vehicle. It's just the outer fenders are different. And so basically, I'm pretty sure that all the Saturn hybrid projects will be basically they have sister cars in the Chevrolet fleet, and they'll be basically pushing those developed products into their Chevrolet line is what's going to happen. So I don't think we're going to see the Chevrolet hybrids go away. So the two-mode currently is the view would be the one that I would also suggest if you're looking at that gets some pretty phenomenal fuel economy. And it also has, because of the two-mode, they have the capability then of you can do trailer towing fairly easily with that vehicle.
What is the two-mode? What does that mean?
Well, they call it a power split. So what they do then is they count the number of planetary gear ratios you have in the transmission. So a Toyota Prius is a one-mode. There's only one set of gears in it. And in the two-mode then, there's actually two sets of planetary gears. And so they have... basically a lot more options as to whether they, you know, which mode they want to drive in. So in a two mode, you actually can run it like a series vehicle where you use a motor coupled to the engine as a generator and use one electric motor to drive the wheels, or you can drive off the battery. Or there's a clutch between everything, and you can, like in trailer tow mode, you run at highway speed, you run the motor directly to the wheels, which is the most efficient path at that point. Electric drives are not good torque converters, which is what a series is. So the series do exceptionally well in the city where you're doing stop and start traffic.
Yeah.
But when you get on the highway, then you're always trying to, you're creating electricity and directly using it to get an electric motor. And that path isn't nearly as efficient as like a transmission would be.
All right. Does that help you out, Ed?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. You can join in too with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email at talk@wpr.org. Glenn, you mentioned 2004 as sort of a cutoff. I mean, before 2004, you might want to be a little leery about used hybrids, the battery at least. Let's say 2004 to the present. Have the batteries changed any over that five-year period? So like a brand new one, is it going to be better than one from 2005, let's say?
We've had small incremental changes, and Panasonic and Sanyo are kind of the first battery companies, and we all know them as battery manufacturers, to get to do those first products that were basically developed in Japan. And so what we've seen then from there is like Johnson Controls, actually out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, has an advanced battery division. And so about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, they actually bought a company called Saft. So with that, then they've become a global producer of these hybrid batteries. And they have a couple customers. I don't know of anybody in the United States right now that is using their products. So what's happened is there's been incremental changes. The change from Panasonic between 201 and 204 has been very large. And now what's happening is we're kind of on this holding pattern.
Yeah.
Because these were nickel metal hydride batteries. And what everybody wants to go to now is what we call, you're hearing lithium ion, and there's different... Yeah. There's different patented technologies for this. You're always using the precious metal lithium.
Yeah.
And then whether you're using a nano molecule on the other side or another metal to get your voltage potential, you know, that's where the difference is between the A123, which is, if you have a DeWalt battery pack, that's basically what you have. And Milwaukee Tool uses more of the technology that Johnson Controls uses. Everybody wants to move to that battery, and what's happened is there's been some delays because there's a few more safety issues with it, and because we talked about this warranty issue and the battery manufacturers, and one bad event we've seen, like, you know, we saw this with a diesel car in the 70s with GM, right, is just will kill everybody's perception of hybrids. So they're kind of, I don't see any more development in the nickel metal hydride batteries. So since 204 to now, there's been very small changes. And now what we're going to see is the next big leap will be this lithium ion technology. And the end effect is we use about one third the lithium we would have to, or one third the nickel that we would in the nickel metal hydride batteries.
Oh, so the cost of that is then going to come down?
Yeah, and so that's the idea, is that if you start looking at all the nickel in the world, if we're going to make all these battery packs, then we're running out of the nickel supply. So if we go to one that'll stretch it 3 to 1, we get more vehicles on the road.
That makes sense. And one other question before we go back to the phones. I'm just going back to the guy or the person out there who may have last week bought a 2002. And now hearing you say, well, you know, maybe that wasn't a good idea. If you do lose the battery on that, can you put a 2009 battery or a 2008 battery in one of those 2003 or 2002 vehicles, and what does it cost?
Yeah, so if you're frugal about this, there's actually, because there's so many Priuses on the road and they're not they don't have a get-out-of-jail-free card when it comes to accidents. There's actually quite a few salvaged parts in the United States right now. You can, basically, the cell size is exactly the same between the 201s and the 204s. The only difference is you use 38 cells in 201 and you used 28 in 204. So you'd have to end up buying two packs, and then you could bolt them back into the 201 frame, and you'd probably end up with a better battery with that. And we've found them very inexpensive, like less than $500. We've gotten battery packs and vehicles that were, you know, basically salvaged at less than 10,000 miles.
Oh, well, that's not so bad then.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to Judy in Milwaukee. She has a question for you. Judy, hello.
Hi. I was curious about I drive a Honda Civic now, but I definitely miss my Blazer, except that obviously the gas mileage was too ridiculous for me, because I put probably about 100 to 150 city miles on my car a day for my work.
Oh.
And when I was shopping for a car in 2005, I ended up getting a Honda Civic just because of the mileage, but what I really wanted was a hybrid SUV. I looked at the Escape and the Mariner, but at that time they both told me that towing would be an issue. Has that changed, or is it going to change, or is it still a problem towing like a 16, 17-foot boat behind a hybrid Escape or Mariner?
Well, thanks for the call, Judy. If you're familiar with the Toyota Prius, we call it the one motor, the power split. That's exactly the same technology that's being used in the Ford Escape powertrain. And so that's the reason they don't want you to pull a big trailer, is because you have to use the electric motor at all times. And so what will happen is sooner or later we over-temperature that motor. If you're really wanting an SUV platform, they actually do make a two-mode Chevy Tahoe right now. And this is one we talked about. It has a little more sophisticated transmission in it, and that one actually has a full trailer towing capabilities.
Wow.
Chevy Tahoe.
Yeah, here again, it's a fairly large vehicle, and so, I mean, mass is your enemy when you're in the city. You have to deaccelerate it, and you have to reaccelerate it. So, and the capture efficiency on a good hybrid system is maybe 50% of the energy you started with, kinetic energy you started with before you stopped and reaccelerate. If you get that back to the road, you're doing pretty good with a hybrid.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Glenn Bauer, our guest here, as we talk with him about hybrid vehicles on the Ideas Network. Talking the world of hybrid vehicles today with Glenn Bauer, senior scientist in mechanical engineering in the UW-Madison College of Engineering. Really pleased to have him along today and happy to have you listening in. Give us a call with your questions about hybrids at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Let's go to John in Round Lake, Illinois, to start things off here. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
One, love your show. I got a question about, you know, when the weather really gets cold, even down here in northern Illinois, sometimes the car batteries have trouble, you know, turning over. Now, are these hybrid batteries going to be any good when it's really cold? And I have a second question to follow that up.
Sure.
I don't see these hybrids with, like, photovoltaic cells on the roofs to help recharge these things while, you know, I'm at work. It would be really a good idea, I think.
Okay. All right. Two questions here.
Sure. We can address the first one. Yes, there is some we call degradation in the performance of the batteries as they get colder. It isn't as prominent as you would see like in a lead acid battery, which is what you normally have to start your car.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you do then is you just have to derate the power capacity of the electrical components. And so some people will actually, if you have a liquid-cooled battery, which is, seems to be the next trend, most of the ones to date so far have been air-cooled. What they try to do with air-cooled systems is hopefully the cabin heats up and then you're pulling the cabin air through the battery. But you can, you know how long it takes to for your car to warm up in the wintertime, right? So that yeah. takes a little bit of time. The other thing that happens is you pull the power out of the batteries or put the power into the batteries is what happens is the resistance goes up. And so that's the basically how much it costs you to put it in. And the resistance basically just goes to heat. So what happens is the resistance of the batteries go up as it gets colder. And so what happens is the batteries, if you use them lightly, they tend to basically generate heat that brings them up to temperature. And that typically is the best way to do it. On that note, though, if you're going to drive very short distances in cold weather with a hybrid, you will probably see very low fuel economy because you're warming not only your engine up, but now you're warming the electric motor up and the batteries up and all those other things up. And so, I mean, just talking to some of the engineers, they're like, yeah, if you're going to drive like a couple miles in the wintertime, that they see really low fuel economy numbers in that condition.
All right.
And what was the second part?
Photovoltaic.
Okay, photovoltaic. We've done this in the past on some of our vehicles. The trouble is that photovoltaics aren't that efficient. So if you get the best ones that I'm aware of to date are maybe 17 or 18% efficient. And so for a square meter in the middle of the desert, you can get about a hairdryer's worth of energy.
Okay.
And so, you know, if you take the whole vehicle and cover it with photovoltaics, it'd be maybe like two hairdryers running. And so if you look at the size of the batteries and like the amount of energy you'd have for an electric vehicle, you'd have to probably let it sit in direct sunlight for 20 to 30 hours to recharge the battery all the way. And I think that's beyond everybody's acceptable limit. When we did it, we basically were able to operate the stereo off of the photovoltaics, but the students were learning and they had a lot of fun with it. So,
All right. Thanks a lot, John, for calling. And Ron in Kenosha, on to you now. Hi, Ron.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a 91 Geo Metro I bought new, and it gets great mileage, 50 miles to the gallon, I think is great. Now, some of these hybrids that are using a small engine motor with their other motor, I mean, I think I still get better fuel mileage without that electric motor.
Yeah?
Yes, that is quite possible. The Geo Metro is a very small vehicle, and so we talked about this before, is that basically the mass of the vehicle is what you pay for as far as fuel economy. So accelerating and deaccelerating it, and then the biggest, we pay for two things, basically two major components we pay for, is tires. We want to go around corners, so we do need to have some friction, okay? So because of that, we pay for the fact that we need friction to go around the corners while we're going in a straight line. And so that's proportional to the mass of the vehicle, how much energy it costs us through the tires. And the other one then is when you get to above 30 miles per hour is what we call aerodynamic drag. And so if you look at the front of the vehicle, we call it frontal area. If you just basically did a projected view or, you know, you like the cartoons, you put the hole in the wall. If you drove your car through a piece of paper and you traced out what that shape was, that would be your frontal area. And so the car you're talking about, the Geo Metro, is very light and it has a very small aerodynamic footprint. And so it will get very good fuel economy. The Honda Insight was one, a hybrid that was out there, and it was very similar to the Geo Metro. And what they did then is they had a starter alternator on the vehicle. And so it was a very mild hybrid.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Let's see, we've got Bob in Arborvitae emailed wondering about your perspective on the new hydraulic hybrids. What are they about?
Well, the hydraulic hybrid ideas have been around for a while. We talked about the efficiency of electric motors and the fact that, you know, by the time I have an electric motor and put it into a battery, if I can do that at maybe 80% efficiency, that's actually very good. Well, hydraulic fundamentally can have a higher efficiency rate storing it. The problem is you have to have fairly large tanks of hydraulic fluid on your vehicle. And so the volume you need for the hydraulic system becomes fairly large. And then you basically what you're doing is it's like, let's say, a big balloon idea. Mm-hmm. You're storing hydraulic fluid at 3,000 to 5,000 PSI. And so you need about maybe 3 or 4 or 5 gallons of this hydraulic fluid. The other thing you don't get with the hydraulic hybrids then is you don't get a lot of storage capacity. So you brake coming up to a stoplight, you store that energy. You're going to reuse all of that energy right away. So the throughput's a lot better, but you don't really have this ability to kind of store the energy. There are some people that were trying to do like a series style so that the motor, the engine of the vehicle, just be connected to a hydraulic pump. And then you tried to, but in that case, you have to very quickly adjust the motor to the amount of volume of hydraulic fluid you're using. So the one application I can point to is salvage or the garbage trucks. They go, what, 150 feet between stops? And it's basically all accelerator, all brake is the way they drive, right? And these already have huge hydraulic systems on them. And so they and they already have the weight. So basically all they have to do is add usually one thing, and it's what we call the accumulator, and this is the one that holds that high pressure fluid in it. And so typically, and I have seen a couple others on maybe like F-350s, or on the other one that they're talking about maybe is like a FedEx delivery truck, a UPS delivery truck. And those have fairly large volumes, and they're not doing a lot of highway again. And so that's the ones they're targeting. And with the hybrids, one thing that people forget about is maintenance. If you have a hybrid, you're not using your conventional brakes all the time. So when they start looking at some of these fleets, they're looking at, they may break even on fuel, but when they get ahead is the fact that they only have to service the brakes half as often. And if you have a 50 vehicle fleet, that means you have to own one less vehicle because you're not maintaining all the vehicles as often. You don't have to have that spare sitting there.
Okay, so there's some savings there then.
Yes.
Absolutely. Tom emailed and wondered about natural gas-powered cars.
They're actually very viable. So I've been working with some Indian companies, and if you go to India, most everything is natural gas in that country. So it is a very, I mean, the technology is there. I think the problem is the infrastructure for natural gas would be very similar to hydrogen. And so I think the feeling is they'd rather invest the money in a hydrogen, developing the hydrogen infrastructure instead of as an interim developing the natural gas infrastructure. And I don't know that, you know, if they can share components or not. There are some other safety techniques you need basically when filling the vehicles. But as far as that, it burns very clean. And in India, all the buses and all the taxi cabs and everything in the bigger cities are all natural gas.
All natural gas.
Yes.
Debbie in Oak Creek has a question for you. Hi, Deb.
Hi. Yes, I was just wondering, I have a 2009 Chevy Malibu hybrid that gets about 29 miles per gallon. And my previous car was a 2005 Chevy Malibu six-cylinder non-hybrid that got about 31 miles per gallon. So, you know, basically I'm not seeing any savings with the hybrid.
What do you think, Glenn?
Okay, so the one I'm thinking of, this has the integrated starter alternator on it. It's a fairly small, mild hybrid.
Yeah, it's a mono. I know when I got it from the dealer, they said it was a mono hybrid, and something about there being a dual, and that one is maybe has better efficiencies.
Yeah, so this one's a very, very mild hybrid, and so basically what they're doing is they're replacing the conventional alternator and the conventional starter, basically with one unit, and then the efficiency of that is better than the conventional starter and alternator. So the amount of hybrid you have is fairly minimal. The only other thing it allows them to do is they can stop the engine at stoplights, and then this starter basically has enough energy to start the car moving and start the engine at the same time, and so that's where they see their big, savings. So I've heard these stories before. It may be that typically after you get about 10,000 miles on your vehicles, that's when they become the most efficient. They call them green vehicles when you first get them. You have to sort of use the bearings and the transmission a little bit to call it break-in. And then, so I don't know how many miles you have on it right now.
Well, I have just about 12,000, so maybe I'm hitting that point now.
Let's hope.
Yeah. Okay. So.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Wow. We have Jeff in La Crosse next with a question. Jeff, hi to you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a 2006 Honda Civic Hybrid. I am absolutely delighted with the mileage that I'm getting on it. The problem, however, is it's going through tires. After I had it for about 17,000 miles, the rear tires were unevenly worn. They chattered. The road noise was absolutely incredible. Driving above 50 miles an hour, the tires were replaced at a prorated basis. They thought it was a tire problem, but subsequently they came out with a service bulletin indicating that the rear control arms needed to be replaced, which Honda did. However, I've now this other set of tires that I've got on it is experiencing the same problems, and I'm wondering if the replacing the rear control arms was the solution for Honda for this problem. I've seen a lot of similar complaints on websites on the internet, but I've never seen anybody address the rear control arm situation as the solution to the problem.
Hmm. Glenn, any idea on that one?
All right, this really isn't a hybrid question, but you're lucky because I actually advise a team that builds a third scale formula car. So I've had a similar situation. I drive a Ford Focus, 4-cylinder manual transmission. So and the reason I don't drive a hybrid is because I commute 25 miles on the highway. So in my situation, it wouldn't take advantage of the hybrid. And what I've seen before, and this happened to me, I think it's actually the rear. There's a dampener, and we call it, it's got a spring, coilover spring, and then it's a shock absorber built together, and we usually call them struts now. And I think what's happening is once you get a tire imbalance, it'll oscillate, and it creates a natural frequency. And so what's happening is you're getting more pressure on the tire, like every time it comes around. And the one thing that I do to try to alleviate that is I try to rotate my tires a lot more often. And that's the only thing I've found that really takes care of that. So that's one thing I'd suggest, and I've had it before. The other one is if for some reason your tire gets out of balance, that causes it to want to do this forcing function. We call it forcing function, or it kind of drives it at its natural frequency. And that could be the other thing that happens if you lose the wheel weight. Some of these that have these new aluminum rims, it's hard to keep the wheel weights on them. And so once you lose a wheel weight, then you're out of balance. You'll get a vibration in the car, and that basically causes the tire to wear unevenly. And if you don't rotate them and such or get it rebalanced, then it just perpetuates itself into like a flat spot on the tire. And then once it gets flat, you just have to replace the tire. I did have one more comment on Debbie from the 205 to the 209 Malibu. Is that the other thing that we have to be wary of is that the emission standards for all the vehicles keep getting more and more stringent. And because they become more and more stringent, we as consumers are paying for that at the gas pumps. To make it more the cleaner tailpipe, we typically as engineers have to take some of the efficiency out of the engine. And so in that four-year period, what I'm guessing is probably the tailpipe became twice as clean. And because of that, they had to take some of that fuel efficiency out of the engine to ensure that the tailpipe meets the tailpipe emission standards. And so that's one thing that a lot of people forget about. Like you take a car 15 years ago, I'm like, yeah, but it has no emissions control on it. So yes, you can do a lot more things with the engine and make it run in a more efficient zone, but you'd never pass your emission standards.
Okay. Mike in Rice Lake, we turn to you now. Hi, Mike.
Hi, guys. Good show. This isn't a hybrid question, but it's on the all-electric vehicles. I've always wondered, what do they do for heater and air conditioning? Because it seems like those would be huge power sponges. And, do they even have those on those type of vehicles, or are they practical?
Mm-hmm. Typically what they're trying to do is they try to have a system that circulates a fluid in the seat. And so it's much more efficient to, it's like a seat warmer on some of the leather option vehicles, right? If you basically heat the seat up, it gives the driver a perception of being hot or cold without having to heat all of the air in the cabin. And so you're right, that is a problem. And then EV1s, when GM had those out there, that was a big issue. They're in California and Arizona, so in the middle of summer there, most of their energy was going to running the air conditioning system. And so that's typically what they do now, is they try to have a heating and cooling fluid basically circulated right in the seat. So you're just like NASCAR.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. I see they're going to come out with, or they're talking about coming out with, or maybe they have come out with a Segway vehicle. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen that one yet, but I in the spring, I advised five teams, so my last, from about the end of March to middle of May, I'm not around too much.
Let's go to Steele and then Nina next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. You had just mentioned, our car's tailpipes are twice as clean, but could you compare European, Canadian pollution control standards to between Europe and the U.S., and is that why they get that extra percentage of mileage for their fuel cars because of they're that much dirtier? Because they get some serious good mileage.
Part of it you'll have to look at is actually the economies as they are. In Europe, they tax fuel very heavily. And so in Europe, it is very beneficial to pay for fuel economy improvements on the vehicle because they'll pay for themselves before the vehicle useful life is over with. In the United States, I mean, we pay maybe right now about $2 a gallon. They're probably still paying on the order of $4 to $6 a gallon.
Yeah.
And so in Europe, they typically have smaller vehicles, and their emission standards right now are actually fairly close to ours, and they're actually going to implement something in the near future that the U.S. still hasn't done, and that is that they're looking at the number density of particles coming out of gasoline engines, and because of that, every gasoline engine in Europe will now have a particulate filter just like the diesels do. So the gasoline engines do have particulates. They're just so fine we can't see them. And so these are the ones that make it in. The diesel ones usually get caught in your natural filter system in your nasal area and stuff. Mm-hmm. And where the fine ones out of the gasoline ones actually usually make it all the way into your lungs. And so they're looking at that in Europe, and they're actually going to implement that. And I'm guessing we'll see that in the United States in the next couple of years. So I would say they're pretty on par with us. It's just Europe has been more lenient with having a dual standard for diesels versus gasoline. Because the diesel is fundamentally more efficient than the gasoline engines. And so they allow these dual standards, but they've been really tightening down on the diesel standards now in Europe. And so they'll be fairly closely, they'll merge in the European Union.
Hmm. There you have it. Thank you very much for calling. And let's turn to Roger in Palatine, Illinois. Hi, Raj.
Hi. I'm a teacher at Harper College in Palatine, Illinois. I invented a air electric hybrid vehicle. And we're building an air electric hybrid go-kart in our youth summer classes this summer. I'm wondering what you think of the concept. We use compressed air to create the electricity to turn an alternator, and then that charges the batteries.
Yeah. Typically, the problem with the efficiency of compressed air is when you run the air compressor, the air gets hot, and if you lose the heat in that air, then you've lost the energy in that compression process. So if you can insulate that and keep the air hot, then you keep the energy in it. But if you run the air compressor and then it gets, usually it gets to the point where you can't even touch it with your hand, you'll burn yourself. If it goes through a cooling stage where the air becomes very cool, then you've lost a lot of the energy mechanical energy you put into it. And so that's where they become less efficient.
Well, we've already tested the air turbine from our compressed air tank, and heat hasn't been much of a problem. Mainly this class is to show that this concept works. So you would say that the concept probably works, with the exception of this heat problem.
I have no problem with the concept working. I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying the amount of energy it takes to create the compressed air that goes into your compressed air tank, that process itself is not as efficient as other avenues that are available to us.
Mm-hmm.
Your, you're the best I've ever heard on this subject of hybrids, so thanks a lot.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Well, Toyota, just days away from that 2010 Prius, releasing it, a little bigger outside than its predecessor. It's more powerful, more fuel efficient. They say 50 miles to the gallon. More luxurious. And is this kind of the benchmark for hybrid vehicles, do you think? Or
well, I would. I mean, obviously, Toyota was the first ones, and they have the most experience with it. And I think they're going. I think they knew that Ford was coming out with the Fusion, and so I think they upscaled the Prius to be kind of in that market to compete a little bit more with the Ford Fusion. And so it looks like they'll get comparable fuel economy numbers. Now, the problem you have is when you see that sticker,
yeah,
in the window, it's kind of tricky with the hybrids because you can very easily drive them in a very different style than they do when they test them. And if you're not familiar with the process, there's a 4-foot steel roller that simulates the road when you drive these on a dynamometer. And that way the emissions equipment can be next to the car. You don't have to put it in a trailer or anything. And so, I mean, it'd be interesting for somebody like Car and Driver or Road and Track to take two of these vehicles and actually do kind of a side-by-side comparison of real-world driving and see what the efficiencies of the vehicles are. But yes, I think they are becoming more powerful, and that's what they're looking at. I mean, Lexus, there's a couple out there that use the hybrid to develop performance. And, you know, all the hybrids always add costs. So if it's a performance car to start with, then people sometimes they'll shell out the money and go for the performance.
Glenn, a great pleasure. Will you come back and be with us again?
Sure, no problem.
Good luck with your teams.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Glenn Bauer, Senior Scientist in Mechanical Engineering at the University of Wisconsin-Madison College of Engineering. Really pleased to have him with us, and we'll try to get him back and talk with him again about vehicles. Because obviously, he knows an awful lot about them. Let's let you know that Jeff Anthony, Manager of Utility Programs for the American Wind Energy Association, talks about wind power tomorrow at 11. And then Jim Carrier has a lot to say about shrimp and the world of shrimp fishing and farming. Stay with us.